She really wanted some chicken McNuggets. That's how the story began that I heard the other day about a 24-year-old woman in Toledo, Ohio in 2010. This lady in 2010, she drove up to a McDonald's and she asked for some McNuggets. When the employee told her that they were still serving breakfast and so she couldn't have McNuggets yet, the lady got mad. And she started yelling at the employee. Then she got out of her car and she walked around it and went to the window and she punched the employee in the face. At this point, another employee had come up to the door while they were yelling and screaming and seeing that. She punched the second employee in the face through the drive-through window. By then, of course, it was a huge ruckus. Another employee had come up. They were trying to slide the drive-through door closed as she was trying to keep it open to keep Adam, even trying to climb through the drive-through window at these employees. They finally were able to shut the door, and the lady took her elbow and started trying to break the window down with her elbow. She then went back to her car, grabbed an empty bottle, and smashed it against the window before finally getting in her car and driving off. So today I want to talk about, like I said, the title of our sermon is Growing into Greatness, and ask the question, what does a great woman look like? Because as that crazy yet true story shows, we need to think about this in our society and our culture, but also as parents and as people. What does a great woman look like? Verse 10 in Proverbs 31 says, an excellent wife, who can find her? For her worth is far above jewels. That question at the very beginning of this passage, an excellent wife, who can find her? It's not a question of like it's impossible. Like, who can find her? It does not meant to discourage us that an excellent wife is impossible. It's meant to challenge us. It's to motivate us. It's to show not that there's surpassing rarity about there being an excellent wife or excellent women, but the surpassing value of her. As it says in the very next verse in chapter 10, the very next line in verse 10, her worth is far more than jewels. An excellent woman, worth is far more than jewels. So, where does a woman get her greatness? You know, when you think about our society, what our society says about where a woman's greatness comes with, usually we talk about stuff, well, her beauty or her ability to charm people or the achievements that she achieves in life or the success and the strongness that she shows in the face of opposition. In other words, we tend to point to these outward achievements and appearances to say that a woman is great. And we as parents, then, when we have kids, We go to them and we raise daughters who we want to be great or sons who we want to have great wives. That's what we tend to do. We tend to go to them and try to teach them and show them and be like, hey, your greatness in life is based on your outward appearance and your outward achievements. But the question is, you know, God created us, man and woman. God's our creator. So maybe we need to put down the social media, we need to put down our magazines, we need to set aside the commercials, we need to quit listening to the peer pressure, and let's actually give God a chance, who created us, to tell us what he thinks a great woman makes. Mm-hmm. And he does exactly that in Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31. There's two things we need to realize before we even get started in this passage. And the first of those is that it's the last section in the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs was written for young people, and especially young men. So even though this passage is a picture of a great woman, it's actually written for guys to hear. So what that means is, if you're here and you're a man, you can't check out today on this sermon and be like, oh cool, he's talking to the women today. Because this passage was actually talking to you. Every person here, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're young or old, this passage has something to say for you. And the second thing we've got to know is that this is a poem that's an acrostic poem of the Hebrew alphabet. So each verse begins with the next consecutive letter in the Hebrew alphabet. What that means is that the symbolism at the end, as you get to verse 31, is that this is the greatness of a woman from A to Z, the picture of a woman of excellence from every holistic value we can look at. So, what makes a woman great? How do we grow into greatness? First, let's look at the qualities that this picture shows, and then we'll talk about the application for us as individuals, men and women today. So first, she has hands that work hard. She has hands that work hard. Let's skip verses 11 and 12. Let's just start at verse 13 and go through verse 19. It says, she looks for wool and linen and works with her hands in delight. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. And she rises while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her attendants. She considers a field and she buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She surrounds her waist with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her profit is good and her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hand to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. So Proverbs 31 can be looked at in a couple different ways. One of those is to see this poem as being a random list of qualities of a great woman. And that, I think, has something to it. But the way I want us to look at today is to see this as the growth of a woman who's great, as a progression. That the verses aren't random, but they show a progression of somebody's life. So you start off in verse 13, and it's just a woman and a man, and they're probably married in a small house or something like that. It's just the two of them. And of course, back in the author's time, the women stayed home and worked, so that's what it describes. The husband leaves. But even though this woman's alone, it doesn't mean that she kind of sits on the couch and watches TV or just spends all the phone chatting with her friends and stuff. She says, no, I'm going to get to work. And she goes and she looks for wool and linen so she can start taking care of this side job to help her family. Then you get to verse 14 and it progresses a little further. She reaches out and she realizes that she can not just make stuff for her family, but she can make stuff to trade. So she begins to make stuff for her family and to trade. And she's like a merchant ship that travels far to trade these things that she has to gain stuff that her family couldn't get if she didn't do that, if she didn't reach out for that variety. And then verse 15, it goes a little bit farther. Because you would think, well, she's starting to trade stuff, she's working hard, she's getting some income, does that mean that she quits? No. In verse 15, it says, hey man, she rides, she's still getting up early, and now she has a family. It's not just her and her husband, she has children, they even have enough money to have attendants. But she's not lazy then, but she gets to work and she gets up early to provide for her family, her husband, her kids, these attendants, exactly what they need for the day. But then it goes a little bit further because her husband has seen that she works hard. He trusts her to make wise decisions. And one day she goes and she sees a field that's for sale, that's barren, and nobody seems to want. But this woman sees potential. And because she's been working hard, she has a little bit of extra income, and so she uses her extra income. She buys this field, she plants a vineyard, and it explodes, and now her family has another source of income because of her wise dealings and her ability to work hard. Does this cause her to quit then? No. Verse 17, as she again guards her waist with strength and makes her arms strong, she knows that what she's doing is good. She knows she's bringing profit into the family. And so that just causes her to work just as hard. And she works into the night. The lamp doesn't go out. And she continues to stretch out her hand to work the spindle and the distaff. We see a picture of a woman, verses 13 through 19, of somebody whose hands work hard. In fact, this is the largest section in this poem to kind of show that this is a major theme of what makes this woman great, that she works hard. I mean, this woman is so full of energy. When you read it, I hope you can sense that she is doing stuff. Her husband might be like the coach of the family because he's the leader, but this woman's the quarterback. She's on the field. She's moving people into places. She's getting play calls into place. And just like it said about that field, she's even willing to make an audible, and her husband trusts her to do that. She's the quarterback of the family. And when I think about this passage and this section in particular, I hope and I believe fully in my heart that people can say that is true of Ashley, 100%. When Ashley and I were first married, I was at school, and so I couldn't provide the major income for our family. And so Ashley stepped up, and Ashley was the main breadwinner for our family for most of our married life. She was the main breadwinner of our family. She worked in schools as an elementary ed teacher, even on times when it was really hard on her. And then on Saturdays, often we would go out and she would buy little trinkets, she would buy furniture and stuff. She'd come home, refurbish it, and sell that on the side to make even more income for our family. Ashley worked hard for us. And I think about how she provided for us in the cooking field. Now, when we first got married, the cooking could have been better.
I'm not even offended. He's right.
One time she set off to make taco lasagna, which is lasagna but with Mexican-style ingredients instead of Italian-style ingredients, and it came out as taco soup. So that was interesting. And then another time she went to make hamburger steak. This is within our first year of marriage. She went to make hamburger steak. She looked in the ingredients cabinet and she saw breadcrumbs. And she thought, breadcrumbs, that would be a great addition to hamburger steak. So she added that in to the hamburger steak, cooked it in the oven, and what do y'all think actually came out? Meatloaf. Somebody knows what really makes meatloaf.
And now I do too.
And now we do too. Now we know what makes meatloaf. Breadcrumbs and hamburger meat. And it was actually pretty good for meatloaf, you know, even if it was accidental meatloaf. But Ashley got better, and she worked at it, and now she's one of the best cooks I know. I love eating her food at home. We see a picture in this passage of a woman who's a picture of somebody who works hard with her hands. Now, this passage, like I said, the author was talking about his day where it was mostly common that every woman stayed home. So we can't take this passage to mean, hey, you know, women have to be at the house in order to have a blessing. That's not what, but that's pushing this passage too far. God is not trying to say, hey, if you work in a job as a woman, then you're not a blessing or a hardworking part of your family. That's not the point of this passage at all. But on the flip side, we also have to be careful because our culture goes to the other extreme and it tells our girls, hey, unless you go in the workplace, then you can't have a fulfilled life. And we can't go to that extreme either. There is a beautiful picture in this passage of a woman who is very satisfied and a blessing to her family who's working from home. And so we can't say, hey, this is a picture of somebody that the woman has to be in the home. Neither can we agree with our culture and say that women have to go to the job. What we have to say is it depends on who the woman is and the calling God has placed in her life. But one thing must be true, whether she's at home or whether she's at the workplace. A great woman works hard with her hands. After all, in doing this, she's just mirroring Jesus Christ. When you get home today, I challenge you, look through your Gospels and note every time Jesus was doing something in the Gospels. Jesus worked hard. I mean, do we even dare mention the cross? Think how hard his work was when he went to the cross to pay the penalty for our sins. Jesus is the picture of somebody who worked hard. And when a woman works hard with her hands, what she is doing is she is showing the love of Jesus to the people around him, just like Jesus showed when he worked hard when he was on earth and still works for us today. So the first quality of a great woman is she works hard with her hands. Second quality is her hands give to others. And this ties in directly with the previous section. That's why it's still hands. So to get you the feel of how closely it ties, let's actually read verse 19 again, and then we'll do 20 through 23. Verse 19 says, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hands to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her households are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. So verse 19 and verse 20 are purposely tied together because it repeats the same language of the hands. And it shows that this is not just a woman who works and gains things, but somebody who gains things in order to give. And that's a vital principle that we got to learn is to simply gain things for ourselves and for the sake of ourselves produces greed and stinginess. But if you gain things for the purpose of generosity, if you gain things for the purpose of sacrificing it, that's a whole different story. So as we go through our lives, as this woman was going through her life in this picture, and she was gaining money, she knew she had a choice. She could either take this money and could grow into greediness and stinginess, or she could take this money and could grow to generosity and sacrifice, and she chose the second option. She used her gain in order to give to others. She gave to the needy and the poor, verse 20. Verse 21, she gives to her children, her old household. It says she doesn't have to worry about the winter cold in the future because she knows that she is taking care of her family. She is giving to them from her gains. Now, that doesn't mean she doesn't take care of herself at all. Verse 22 shows that she dresses herself well. She takes care of herself. It's not frivolous to take those and have nice clothes. She does take care of herself, but she does so not to the sacrifice of taking care of others. And in verse 23, she even takes care of her husband. And verse 23 is interesting, because how does she take care of her husband? She literally takes care of her husband because people know that she's a great woman. It says her husband is sitting in the most prominent places in the city, and he has power, and he has a position in town. But the verse 23, you get the sense that he doesn't have that power position because of who he is. He has that power position because of who she is. Literally, having this great woman as a wife, people notice, and they basically said, wow, if this dude can catch this woman, he must have something special about him, and we got to support him and bring him into a place of prominence. She supports him. She helps him grow. She lifts him up. She helps him. She brings him up as much as she can. She doesn't tear him down, both in the public and in private. She gives to others. This is such a beautiful picture that we can do and women can do to help mirror Christ. Because when you think about it, Jesus came to earth. When he came to earth, he didn't come to earth to gain anything for himself. Jesus got nothing for himself by coming to earth for us. Why did he come to earth? He came to earth to gain something for you. In fact, the emphasis is on her hands. What do Jesus' hands even look like? Jesus' hands have holes in them from the nails that he was nailed to the cross with.
That's right.
And Jesus gave up his life so we could gain life. And when a woman is great and she's willing to take what she has and give to others, she is simply mirroring the love of Christ to the people that she loves to. So a great woman, her hands work hard and her hands give to others. And third, a great woman, her heart obeys God. This is in verse 24 and on. It says, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She watches over the activities of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Now, you might be sitting here today, you're like, how are you getting she obeys God with her heart from verses 24 through 27? Because it doesn't actually mention those words in particular. Well, you have to remember where Proverbs 31 is. It's the last section of the book of Proverbs. What is the book of Proverbs about? The book of Proverbs' point is to say loving God is not just about knowing the Bible. And loving God is not just about saying I have a relationship with God. You truly love God when you live out your love for God in the everyday matters of your life. And so all it does is list. These are not suggestions. This is an idea of what does it look like to actually live out your love for Jesus in every mundane task that you do. And so you get to the end of this book that's about loving God, not just at church, but everywhere, and you get this picture of a woman who's doing exactly that. So verse 24 is not a random repeat from the previous section about working hard. The book of Proverbs frequently talks about how God wants you to be wise with your finances and your works. And verse 24 is showing that's exactly what she's doing. But she's not just following God with her finances. She's following God with her future. It says she's looking and smiling at her future in verse 25. Now, that could be partially because of her hard work. But if we rely on our hard work alone to give us confidence in the future, that's presumption. But if we can truly trust in God's provision in the future, that's where true faith is found. And that's why this woman is smiling. She's not smiling at the future because she's got a big savings account. She's smiling at the future because she trusts in the Lord to have her future in her hands. And then it says that what she has in her heart doesn't stay in her heart. It comes out of her mouth. And it says she's able to teach and people what Scripture says. But she's not like some people that know they're smart and make everybody else feel dumb when they talk to them or make everybody feel bad about herself. She teaches the wisdom of God with kindness and with gentleness. And she even goes to her household and she manages her household exactly how God told her to. And again, she's not idle. She works hard what God has told her to be as a mother and as a wife in her household. This is a picture in these verses of essentially, and if we had time, we could go back and point all these verses in Proverbs, which we don't. But you could go back and you could nail proverb after proverb after proverb in this whole book that essentially it's saying this woman loves the Lord right because she obeys God with her whole heart. And it comes out not just when she's at church, or not just when she's at home praying by herself, but every task she does. And then finally, we see that this great woman blesses her household. Her household is blessed because of her. Verses 28 and 29. And let's read 28 and 29. Let's go back and read 11 and 12. It says, her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Verses 11 and 12. It says, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. When you get the picture of this woman, it's really no wonder that people praise her. Because this woman in this passage is awesome. And it says, first, that her children bless her. Her children praise her for what she is. They see their mom. And they see that she doesn't just say what she loves Jesus, or she just pretends that she loves Jesus at church, but in every action of every moment of her life, she lives out the love of her life, which is Jesus, in everything she does. And her kids notice that, and they're impacted by it. And it changes who they are. It changes who they're going to be when their parents, they grow up, and they say, my mom was awesome because she loved the Lord. And they are willing to tell people about it, and not just on Mother's Day. You know, when you're supposed to tell your moms that they're awesome. They will tell people, my mom was awesome any day. But not just her kids feel blessed, but her husband feels blessed. Literally, in verse 29, he says, my wife is the best woman in the world. That's what verse 29 says. And again, it's understandable why. Just go back and read verses 13 and on, and you kind of see where he's getting with that. But we see specifically earlier that this book begins, this passage begins and ends with talking about the husband. And we learn in verse 11 that because of who she is, his heart can trust her. He can trust her in finances and truth and generosity and the work life that she has in every area of her life. There's not a specific part of her that he says, I can't trust her because of her competency and her character. Verse 11 says, she also gives no lack of gain, that she brings him up. She brings him up financially. She brings him up spiritually. She brings him up emotionally, that every part of his life is a gain because he's around her. And verse 12, it says, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, this passage isn't saying that this woman's perfect, because the only perfect person is Jesus. Proverbs 31 is a photoshopped picture of a great woman. All the blemishes have been removed, if we could say it that way. But what verse 12 says is not that she's perfectly good, but she's consistently good all the days of her life. That no matter what, he can say, you know what, my relationship with her has been really one of consistent goodness to me. No wonder her family feels blessed to have her. And so you have this picture of a great woman. Her hands work hard. Her hands give to others. Her heart obeys the Lord. Her household feels blessed. So what are we supposed to do with this picture of a great woman today? Well, this comes in the last two verses, 30 and 31. It says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let the works praise her in the gates. The point of this passage, the thing I hope you take away from today, is the main takeout, and that's value those ladies who live out their love for the Lord in ordinary life. Value those ladies who live out their love of the Lord in their ordinary lives. Verse 30 talks about charm and beauty. It's not that charm and beauty are bad. These are not negative characteristics to have charm and beauty in your life. But what he's trying to get us in our head is to realize that charm and beauty, these outward achievements, these outward successes that we have, these outward appearances, that those are not the things that ultimately bring blessings in life in the long term. They don't bring blessings in your life as an individual in the long term. They don't bring blessings in your life as a spouse in the long term. And they won't bring blessings in your life with your children in the long term. That charm and beauty are great, but they are not the end-all, be-all of life. They're like icing on a cake. Now, I'll admit it. Ashley and I watch baking shows sometimes. Sorry, guys. If your wife has been trying to get you to do that, don't use me as an excuse, women. But we'll watch baking shows sometimes. And in these shows, man, these guys, these girls, they are masters at fondant and with the piping and with icing, and they can make these cakes that look beautiful. I mean, they look awesome to look at. But then they give them to these judges, and if the inside is raw, or if there's an ingredient in there that doesn't work, or worse, there's an ingredient there that can even make people sick, then the outside work really is pointless, because what does it matter to have a cake that looks beautiful if the inside stinks? I mean, think about it. I would rather have a cake that looks okay on the outside, but is delicious on the inside, to a cake that looks great on the outside and is going to end up with me being in the hospital after eating it. And that's what God is trying to drill into our minds today. He says we grow up in a culture that says the icing is the most important part of the cake. That for a woman, the outward appearance, the charm, the successes, the family life, that the way everything, the achievements and appearance of the outward, it says the icing is the most important part. And he says, drill it into your head that the icing can be good, but if the cake stinks, then what good is it? That the best blessings in life don't come from beauty and charm, because they can go away anyway. The best blessings in life as an individual or as a family member comes if your inside loves the Lord your God and lives out that love in the ordinary parts of your life. Mm-hmm. So, for women, let's do three applications today. For women, that means this picture, I challenge you to make it the picture of your life. If you read this passage, you're like, man, I'm never going to do this. This is impossible. That's not the point of this passage. The point of this passage is not to discourage you. The point is to motivate you and challenge you to be a woman who's great. And to define greatness, not by your outward achievements and your appearances, but to define greatness by the way you live out your relationship to the Lord. And so work hard. Give to other people. Be generous. Be a blessing to your family. Obey God with your heart and leave God to the rest. And when you're in life and you are doing these little tasks like changing diapers and stuff that just feel mundane, and feel useless, realize that when you're doing stuff for the Lord like that, there is no task that's frivolous. If you're doing it because you're living out the love of Christ in every task that you're doing. For guys, it means that we've got to realize this passage speaks to us too. You know, our liturgy begins and ends with the husband, but also the dag smack middle of the poem is verse 23. And verse 23 is what? It's the passage about the husband sitting at the gate. So why would this author put a random mention of her husband in the center of the passage? And it's because he wants us as guys to realize this. If you want to be the husband in verse 23, then you need to get a wife that's like Proverbs 31. So for young men, that's the application. It's choose wisely. You can choose a wife who can make you the man that sits at the gates like Proverbs 23, a wife that blesses you your whole life, and a wife that's a gain to you your whole life. But you have to choose wisely. You can't look at the frills and the glamour and the outward appearance of things and the icing. You've got to get to the heart. Don't let the charm and the beauty blind you if you're a young man. Mm-hmm. But find and choose a woman who lives out the love of the Lord in every part she does in her life. Mm-hmm. Then you'll be a man who's in verse 23 and finds himself truly blessed. But it also has another application for guys. That is that if you want your wife to be a Proverbs 31 woman, then you've got to be a great man. Be a man that a Proverbs 31 woman deserves. Look at this passage again. Think about how this woman is working hard with her hands, and she's given to other people, and she's obeying the Lord with her whole life, and she's sacrificing as a blessing to her husband. Do those passages also describe you as a man? Be a man that makes it easy for a woman to be a Proverbs 31 woman. You can't have a great wife if you don't expect to be a great husband. Mm-hmm. Women want guys who work hard. They want guys who are generous. They want guys who are not going to or won't be the leaders and the front edge of their family marching to God. Women don't want guys who sit on the couch all week and watch SportsCenter on Sundays. So if you want a wife who's going to bless you, be a husband who deserves a great wife like that. And if you're here today and you're disappointed and you feel like, man, my wife is not doing that, and I know I don't feel like she will, you be that husband anyway. In fact, be the wife anyway, even if your husband's not, by the way. It goes both ways. Because you can bring them up by being the person you're supposed to be in that relationship. Be a husband who deserves a Proverbs 31 wife. Choose wisely. And then for parents, the lesson is this. We need to raise kids that follow this passage. Mm-hmm. We need to raise daughters who are Proverbs 31 women. We need to raise sons who look for Proverbs 31 women. We need to fight against the culture that tells our kids as they grow up, the most important things you can have is your looks, your social media life, your achievements in school, your achievements in sports, where you're going to job, say, all this is what makes you great. We got to fight against that to say, no, what will be the biggest blessing in my kids' life is if they live out the love of the Lord in everyday life.
That's right.
If my daughter is a Proverbs 31 woman, she's going to have the most blessed life possible. If my son looks for a Proverbs 31 woman, he's going to have the best life possible. And the way to get them there is it starts with us as parents. Mm-hmm. We have to commit to teach our kids at home what it means to follow the Lord. That means we got to tell people, tell our kids verbally, not just around the church, scripture memory verses. Get them to memorize verses. These little books that I handed out to these parents with these questions. Ask those questions to your kids. Read Bible stories to them. Talk to them about who God is. We need to be parents who don't just rely on the church to teach our kids how to live out the Lord, but we teach our kids how to live out the Lord. And we need to be parents who ourselves live out our love for the Lord in everyday life. Because your daughter is not going to be great if you're not living out the love of the Lord in your everyday life. Your son is not going to look for a great woman, and he's not going to be great if we are not living out the love of the Lord in our everyday life. Your kids are probably not going to rise higher than what you do. And guys, one day, your son and daughter are going to have to make a choice. They're going to have to choose what type of person they're going to be and what type of person they're going to marry. And those two choices are going to dramatically change the outcome of their lives. It's either going to be choices that bless them and make them have a blessed life, or choices that make their life really hard. But that choice is not random. It begins with us as parents teaching them what it looks like and showing them what it looks like in their own life. And if you want your kids to choose wisely, then you have to make the wise choice yourself. So the next few moments, we're going to pray and give you a chance to respond to whatever God's laying on your heart. And maybe you're here today and you're a woman and you feel like that you need to recommit to be the type of woman that this passage speaks about. Call out to God today to ask for that. Or maybe you say, I need to be the type of man who deserves that type of woman. Call out to God as Tom sings and ask him that. Maybe his parents say, hey, we need to commit that we're going to be parents who speak about the Bible at home, who live out our love of Christ at home, and not just parents who talk about it randomly. Commit during the time as Tom sings to do that. Look, this cross is up here. If you want to come up here as a family or as individuals to kneel and pray as a tangible sign of that commitment, or I'm up here if you want me to pray for you or somebody else as well. But I want to especially speak to you if you're here online listening, Overflow Room, and you have not placed your faith in Jesus. This woman is not just any woman. She's just not working hard. She loves Jesus, she loves the Bible, and she's saved. She knows what it means to have a real relationship with God. And the only way you can be that is if you repent of your sins and place your faith in Jesus. He is the source of wisdom. He is the way that we achieve the power to actually be the people that God's called us to be. And so if you have never placed your faith in Jesus, do that today so you can leave with the ability of knowing you're not only forgiven, but you have the power to be who God made you to be. So let me pray. Can you respond as Tom sings?